Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So this evening is the full moon of Asalaha, and is the last, say, moon day in the hot season of the Asian calendar. Tomorrow is the beginning of the rainy season. And this is the day that commemorates the first teaching of the Buddha, and his giving of the instruction to the first five disciples, which of course is, say, this Buddha image is a representation, the mudra that the Buddha is using is a teaching mudra. On the base of the image is the replication of the first five disciples receiving teachings, and the Dhamma wheel being set forth, rolling. So the beginning of the teaching career of the Buddha. In that first teaching on the Four Noble Truths is something that the Buddha returned to over and over and over again throughout his 45 years of teaching. And I think one can recognize that this is an essential element of his awakening, his enlightenment. And that is oftentimes recounted as the insight that's pivotal to the for the ending of the asavas, the ending of taints, the outflows. So it's a teaching that is we need to remind ourselves over and over and over again, because it's just so easy to forget. It's easy to assume that you know it just because you can remember it, or that you've reflected on it a few times, or you maybe even reflected on it and had some major insight with it. But the reality is that the more we contemplate this, the more we return to it, the more we rely on it as the basis for our cultivation and training, the more grounded we become in Dhamma. Because we start to see things in their true nature, rather than seeing things according to our preference or idea, our ideal, our view, our opinion, our confusion, our proliferation, because that's generally how we continually see things, through all those different lenses, rather than seeing things through, say, the eye of Dhamma, which stepping out of the personal realm, stepping out of the realm of view or bias or attachment, and seeing things, this is dukkha, this is its cause, this is its cessation, this is the path leading to cessation. Seeing things in that way. Which at first, it's a bit puzzling, you know, why is that important? Why is it useful? Wouldn't it be nicer to see things as lovely, delightful, enchanting, wonderful? Or wouldn't it be nice to see things as at least interesting and fascinating, scintillating? But I think the Buddha recognized that what's the underlying motivation when the mind approaches things from that perspective? And then what's the result? The result almost invariably, as we approach experience from the personal realm, the attached realm, the confused realm, the excited realm, is that we miss the shot. We create complications, we create a sense of agitation, we create a sense of disappointment, discontentment, and we suffer, or we create suffering for others. So for us as human beings to really see the limitations in those various perspectives, and to direct attention to looking at things, viewing things through the eye of Dhamma, through the lens of the way things are, the way things in accordance to truth, and to come to a place of balance, which that seeing things in terms of the way that we can recognize cause and effect relationships, because what we shrink back from, what we fear, what we spend our time trying to fend off, for all the desire to experience happiness and well-being, comfort and security, what underlies it is always a worry and concern that we're going to have to experience suffering in some way, shape, or form. I want to meditate and be happy and peaceful, and not. And the way to do that is to make it as comfortable as possible. Slather on the mosquito repellent, pull out the mosquito nets, and I'm surely going to experience happiness and peace, or some reasonable facsimile there. Please. And somehow it's always unsatisfactory. So which doesn't mean one doesn't can't sort of recognize conditions and try to prop them up in some way. When it really comes down to the bottom line, that investigation of limitation, of what we fear, what we don't want to experience, and what is its cause? I mean, the Buddha is not just sort of trying to get us to, just trying to get us to rub our noses in the dirt of suffering, like you're trying to teach a puppy not to crap on the carpet, but to recognize that we have to understand the cause and affect relationships, that dukkha has a cause, suffering, discontent, dissatisfaction has a cause, and to really attend with mindfulness and clarity and investigation, you know, what is the cause? What is the cause of suffering? The tendency is to just always be focused on external things. My suffering, my difficulties, my discontent is somehow always externalized in some way. It's out there. That person, that circumstance, or even internalized to the extent that we personalize it, view it as my problem, rather than seeing it in a way of these causes and conditions, and that certain when when we invest our attention and energy towards certain kinds of attachment and desire, craving, then it's going to create suffering. And similarly, the whole realm of say disentangling ourselves from that quality of discontent and dissatisfaction of suffering is dependent on causes and conditions as well, and that is the path that the Buddha laid down, so that the investigation of putting in place the causes for the cessation and experience cessation of suffering, experience of coolness, unbinding, stability, awakening. We can put our attention on those causes, and that's what the path that the Buddha laid down, that we in the chanting that we did this evening. Samma ditti, samma sankappo, samma vaccha, samma kammanto, samma jivo, samma vayamo, samma sati, samma samadhi, the Eightfold Path. These are the causes that need to be put into place, and the Buddha points to say, right understanding as the what comes first. What is it that comes first? What is foremost? And it's all tied together, but the Buddha really does point to this primacy of right understanding, and this is something that Ajahn Chah would always make a point of putting his attention on as well, how important right view, right understanding is, and he would place a tremendous amount of care in trying to encourage us to really reflect and investigate, so that we were approaching things from a place of right view, right understanding, a correct perception of of phenomena. And the Buddha also, in one of the one of his important discourses, that he goes through the Eightfold Path and say placing that importance on right view, but then also saying these are supported by and revolve around right view leads the pack, but is supported by right effort and right mindfulness, and then goes through, say, right intention, and saying, but these are led by right view, right effort, right mindfulness, right speech, right action, right livelihood. But those three, are, say, one led by right view, supported by right effort, supported by right mindfulness. These sort of revolve and circulate and support each other in a way that the path comes to fruition, and comes to fruition in right knowledge and right liberation. So that this is really putting the causes in place, because as much as we want to experience happiness, we want to experience liberation, we want to experience awakening, but if we don't have the causes in place, then it's just wishful thinking. It might be nice wishful thinking, it might be correct wishful thinking, but it's wishful thinking without the appropriate causes. So that's one of the things that's always inspired me with the Buddha's teaching in general, and the teaching and example of the various teachers who passed on the tradition, or the various meditation masters, Ajahn Chah, of course, in particular, who's our sort of founding figure. Emphasis on putting forth effort, putting attention onto the practice, onto the causes, so that this is as we bring attention to these causes and are attending to this path. It's quite natural that one experiences peace and clarity. It's just natural that when the sun comes out, it gets hot, or when the moon rises tonight, a full moon, that it will become sort of clearer, or the sky will be brighter, the forest will be sort of more illuminated. It's just natural. Or as the evening starts to set in, then it becomes cooler. It's just natural. The causes and conditions are there. And the result is experienced. So in the same way that as we learn to apply this Eightfold Path and to apply it in the appropriate way, with right view leading, with right effort, right mindfulness, circling and supporting, that the experience will be one of peace. And that is, And that is, again, when we think of the, you know, the, say kind of the rightfulness of the Dhamma, kind of the irreversibility of the Dhamma, the stability of the Dhamma. Dhamma niyamata, dhamma tittata, what is dhammata, as you say, the appropriateness of the Dhamma, the lawfulness of the Dhamma. That is just how it's experienced. It's the way it is when the when it becomes fall, the leaves drop from the trees. When it's springtime, they sprout out again, depending on the kind of tree they are. Sort of, there's a lawfulness that's there. So in the same way, there's a lawfulness of the, as we put forth the our attention and effort towards virtue, integrity, sense restraint, mindfulness, proper livelihoods, right reflection, investigation, establishing of attention, creating stability of mind and tranquility, that the mind clears, the heart settles, and it relinquishes, it lets go of that which creates suffering, because that is what is you know, in terms of the human condition, that's what is central. We want to really be free of any kind of suffering, whatever. And that's, as the clearer the mind becomes, the clearer the heart becomes, the more one recognizes that any kind of attachment, confusion, anxiety, craving is always unsatisfying. It's always creating a sense of dissonance within the heart, so that one wants to relinquish it. One wants to turn towards peace. It's natural. So that allowing the Dhamma to work, allowing the Dhamma to really function, giving it the opportunity for that, say, that its lawfulness to appear within the heart, so that bringing forth the path, allowing those causes and conditions that the Buddha set out as the path that lead to the cessation of suffering to establish themselves within the heart, within our conduct, within our being. So that we give ourselves the opportunity to experience a cessation of suffering, an awakening, a liberation. And that it's just something. If you think about it on a rational level, you think, why not? And that's really what I want. So then we need to encourage ourselves and really give ourselves that opportunity, without obstructing ourselves, because that's what we tend to. Again, we look at external things as being a source of difficulty, but it's really more the internal, shrinking back or not shrinking back from applying right view, right effort, right mindfulness. Or the missing the opportunity to apply, not encouraging ourselves enough to give ourselves to applying, say, right view, right effort, right mindfulness. So that, you know, as we are here together this evening and practicing, just to take this teaching on the Four Noble Truths. We've all heard it. We've all reflected on it. We've all studied it. But to really bring it to heart, to really open our hearts, our attention to its real implications, its deeper implications, and really give ourselves to practicing those with that, taking it up and relying on it, depending on it. I'll offer that for reflection this evening.